You're listening to the New Churches Podcast, a production of Send Network on newchurches.com. We discuss all things church planning. If you're looking to take your next strategic step towards multiplication, you're in the right place. newchurches.com has a new look, a new host, and new resources. Take a minute and check out the Church Planning Masterclass with lessons from leaders like Matt Chandler, D.A. Horton, Trillia Newbell, and more at newchurches.com.
Hey there, welcome to the New Churches Podcast. My name's Clint Clifton, and once again, we've got Noah Oldham here today. And Noah's done a lot of great stuff in ministry. Probably the most first and foremost that you need to know about is he's the founder of August Gate Church in St. Louis, Missouri. And he also is the senior director of church planning deployment at the North American Mission Board. He's been helping church planters for a long time all over the country. And Heather is his wife, and they've got five children together, and they live in the heart of St. Louis. And today, Noah and I are going to talk about discovering pastoral potential right there inside your congregation. And this is a really fascinating conversation. Most of you are passionate about church planting, and you're trying to consider how your church might multiply. And one of the biggest problems you have is developing leadership. And Noah's going to talk about with me today about how you can look right there in your own pews or your own seats of your own congregation and find the future leaders for your church planting work. Before we get into the episode, I want to tell you about a resource we have at newchurches.com. It's called the Church Planting Primer, and it's absolutely free, like everything on newchurches.com. It's a four-session course. It's video-based, and you can offer it to your congregation on a Sunday night or a Wednesday night. You can also allow your small group leaders to use it, but it's a tool that's designed specifically to help your congregation become more aware of church planting. It talks about the biblical rationale for new churches. It talks about the need for new churches we have today and about how new churches began in the New Testament and really how that even happens today. And it finishes up with how everyday Christians can be involved in starting new churches. It's a great resource for you if you want to get your congregation moving in the church planting direction. So it's available again at newchurches.com, and it's called the Church Planting Primer. Noah, welcome back.
Hey, good to be here, man.
Yes. So last time we were together, we talked about residencies, and we did some kind of residency FAQs, sort of the nuts and bolts of residencies. But one of the biggest questions that I get in church planning and in residencies is, where do I get a guy? How do I find somebody to get into residency? So I want to talk about, and at the Send Network, we have a very specific goal of discovering and developing and deploying church planting leaders from within. There are very few churches who have cracked the nut of figuring out how to make members into missionaries. I want not just my church and your church, but our churches to be known for cultivating pastoral leaders from inside of our work. I know if there's a measurable goal for us in multiplication, it's got to be that, because when we raise up a new leader from within, we really put a new church out there in the universe. When we bring somebody who's already headed to ministry into our residency and put them out there, we put a church out in the universe that probably would have been there anyway.
That's right.
That person was developed by somebody else. Yeah. And so we really do want to develop and discover them from right there inside our congregation. So let's talk about that a little bit. Let's think about how, maybe at August Gate specifically, this has played out. How is it that you are discovering or noticing pastoral potential in others?
Yeah, there's a number of things I look for, but one of them is, are they committed to the local church? Mm-hmm. What I mean by that, committed to the whole local church. I think about it in terms of Ephesians 4, apostles, prophets, evangelists, shepherds, teachers. You need all of these giftings, all of this work to undergird the growth of the church, the building up of the church to be what it's supposed to be. You often find within those different gift sets people that are committed to one of those different things, or maybe a couple of them, but they don't really care about the others to the detriment of the church. Same thing happens just in the practical ministries of the local church. Somebody may be committed to showing up on Sunday and they care about the worship gathering, or they care about youth ministry or children's ministry or the men's ministry, on and on and on. But when it comes to, there's a specific need that needs to be filled, and they may not be even be gifted for it or impassioned for it, that they give to it or they attend or they serve because they care about the whole church flourishing.
Yeah.
Those are fewer than I would like to believe. But when we find those people, we realize they care about the whole church moving forward, the mission of this church moving forward. So they're willing to do whatever it takes, whether it means they have, hey, I'm willing to swallow my pride and my embarrassment and my nerves and jump out on stage and give announcements if I have to, or I'm willing to swallow my pride and serve behind the scenes, depending on what their personality is. Those are the kind of people I keep my eye on because I'm like, you love Jesus's church. And not just because what it does for you, because of what it's meant to be.
Yeah, that's amazing. You know, there's this caricature that's kind of been drawn of church planters, the type, the church planter type, and it's like an entrepreneurial leader. But I don't know. I'm interested to hear if your experience is the same as mine. Although there is a version of a church planter that is absolutely that. I've also seen introverted guys be very successful church planters, very fruitful church planters. And it's almost like if you took all the fruitful church planters from my region that I've worked with over the last years and put them all together, you couldn't find a common denominator really. It just is a reminder to me that the Lord does a special thing. And so discovering that is not as easy as noticing a quality or a characteristic, one quality or characteristic.
Yeah. I think if you did the sociological experiment, Clint, of looking at and categorizing all the churches in your city or in your region, and you separated them by tribe or brand or style, you'll find some similarities between the pastors or the planters of those churches. Because they are looking for a certain thing. I think that the last season of church planting in North America specifically, there were some leading voices and they were looking for a certain guy. They had certain qualifications and they planted certain kinds of churches. But as that's become more diversified and people are saying, hey, maybe some of these patterns aren't healthy. Maybe we're looking for something else that's more rounded. What you find is that, oh, wait a minute, all kinds of churches for all kinds of people. Because if I took all the established churches in my area and I separated them by style, I'd find, well, these guys are more shepherding, and that means their churches look a certain way because of that. These guys are more prophetic, so their churches look a certain way. It's going to be the reality, so we have to decide as a church at August Gate, what kind of church do we want to plant? That's going to matter, but also, what kind of church do we want to be? And I know right now in our season of church, we need more shepherds in our church because my top giftings are not shepherding. And so I need more shepherds because if not, what the Bible tells me is my church is going to suffer. Because we don't have shepherds.
I'm with you 100%. My, you know, thinking about that Ephesians 4 kind of matrix of ministry I often say I'm the ape, you know, the apostle, prophet, evangelist sort of. And I've noticed a lot of, these days, a lot more church planter types. Like when I planted, the apes were the common church planters. But now, more commonly, churches are being drawn together by shepherds. I think some of that has to do with the fact that the church planting infrastructure is a little bit more mature than it was when we planted. Therefore, you know, there's some of the logistical components of church planting that you don't have to be so kind of entrepreneurial to do it. There's an infrastructure for it. There's buttons you can press and get certain results out of. There's funding mechanisms in place for church planting and a lot older and more mature and experienced people are planting churches now than there were. It was not uncommon when I planted for there to be a like 23 to 25 year old church planter. Now that's pretty uncommon. Is that your experience?
When I see a 23, 25 year old guy come through, I just start asking how long until he's ready to plant because I'm like, it's not now.
I know, but I can't believe, I was 23 when I started planting.
Were you really, man? I was 26. I was young.
No, and I had planted two churches already.
Wow.
it doesn't even, I mean, it's not smart. I'm not saying it should be that way. I'm just saying it was. And I didn't even know I was doing something weird. But certainly I was younger than most, but, I'm just telling you, the average church planter now, it's not uncommon to have gray-headed church planters now, and which that would have never been a thing years ago.
So. I think it all comes down to ecclesiology. I think that we take that for granted as much. And so I think every local church, as you're thinking, who are we looking at to pastor? We have to think about our ecclesiology. If we don't have that settled, we're never going to do this very well. But when we do, we know the kind of people we're looking for because we know the qualifications for pastors. We also know what's missing among our team because it's not just, are you qualified? Is there a chemistry? We've often told guys, you may be qualified to be a pastor of a church, but it doesn't mean God's calling you to be a pastor of this church because there's a certain chemistry and a dynamic that God has called here with our current leadership team. And until that shifts, like— you may just find it may be a Paul and Barnabas situation. Yeah. You can't co-labor because of some major differences.
Yeah. So when you notice some of those giftings that we talked about a little bit earlier, the love for the local church piece in people in your congregation, what's the way in which you approach them and interact with them about that? Is there some kind of common way, or how would you go about interacting with somebody who you saw some of those gifts in?
Yeah. Generally, I either want to take them to lunch or just get some time with them and just ask them for their dream for the future. Hey, what's God doing in your life?
Yeah.
And how do you see God using you in the church? So we kind of have a cheat for this. In our covenant membership process, we do a covenant membership interview with a pastor and his wife, with a member or the couple that's coming in. And as we have that conversation, we always ask them, what are your gifts? Mm-hmm. What gifts has God given you? And how do you see him using them in the church? And a lot of times we hear guys, they kind of hint around where they want to be used or how they see God using, or it's that opportunity that I have to speak into it. Mm-hmm. And then when we bring them in, we always do a foot washing as a part of our induction. And as we do that, we speak over their life. So I will talk to the man, my wife will talk to the woman, and we'll say, hey, here's what we see in you. Here's what we see God doing and what I think he's going to do in the next season. So we constantly have a practice of hearing from them and then also speaking back into those things as we pray for our members. But if I've had a couple times where I've just taken guys out and said, hey, I see this in you. Yeah. And the Bible says that you need to aspire to it. I'm encouraging you to pray and aspire.
Yeah.
I've had guys tell me no.
Yeah.
And I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
I would rather have me approach a guy and him tell me no than have a guy keep approaching me that I have to tell no.
Exactly. So you blew past something I got to go back to.
Yeah.
So you wash the feet of every member.
Yeah.
Okay. And they're after their membership is affirmed?
As they're being affirmed as a member, yeah.
Okay. And you do that, or you and the elders do that?
Yeah, elders and their wives, or really the small group leader who's been the most influential in their discipleship or bringing them into the church.
Okay.
We don't think that we have to.
Yeah.
We don't think it's a mandate, but we think there's no greater picture in all of Scripture of what it means for the church to serve one another.
Uh-huh.
Jesus said in John 13, I've done this for you, go and do likewise for one another. And we want to model that for people of this is what membership is. Like we're here to serve one another under one master, the Lord Jesus.
Yeah.
And we're locking arms for the glory of God until he says otherwise.
Okay, I love that.
Yeah.
So again, a lot of similarities in the way that we're doing things at Pillar, but when I notice somebody who has, there's a few things that kind of tip me off to somebody's. First of all, we have a preaching lab, and when somebody crushes it at the preaching lab, I'm always like, uh-oh.
Yeah.
That's an indicator that that might be something.
Yep.
And that happens, and it's surprising sometimes who it is that crushes it.
Yeah.
Sometimes you know, we do the preaching lab, and we have all kinds of people participate in that, and you listen to their little 15-minute sermon, and you're like, man, that was helpful, insightful.
Yeah.
Like I could listen to that guy more, that guy, you know,
yeah.
I could be a part of engaging in that ministry. We have in our preaching lab, we have men and women in our preaching lab, even though we're complementarian and don't have women preachers in our church, recognizing there are places for women to preach. But sometimes, you know, in our preaching labs, we're hearing just really gifted, you know, or orators. So that's one place. Another place where I often see it is in the home. You know,
yeah.
I mean, when you have a person in your church come to you and say, hey, I'm having this hard time communicating with my daughter about her faith. How do you talk to your kids about that? You know, or I want to lead my wife spiritually. I don't feel like I'm doing a very good job of that. Like those are indicators to me, like the shepherding, you know, the shepherding impulse is there.
Yeah.
And so it might grow from shepherding in the home to shepherding in a small group to shepherding
exactly.
in a church, you know.
And
so, but that shepherding impulse is really, really important. The truth is most members of most churches don't think themselves to be responsible spiritually for anyone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, we follow Alexander Strauch's biblical eldership of the number one role of a pastor in the church is shepherding. It's a role. You may not be like deeply spiritually gifted in that when it comes to the fivefold stuff. Like that's not my number one gift, shepherding.
Yeah.
I do it a lot. It wears me out a lot more than preaching does. But I look for that in people. And so it's member of a small group that's like they want to be the person that takes the prayer request and reports. That they're praying for people, that they're on the text thread with us, and they're always like, hey, man, how's that going? They care about it. So you see these glimpses of shepherding, at, like you said, these smaller levels. like, okay, God's doing something in their heart. Because ultimately, Clint, when it comes down to it, you look at the biblical model, when Paul's telling Titus, I left you there to put elders in, like, these guys didn't have years to go through seminary.
Right.
It was Christians that were serious about Christianity.
Yeah.
And like, I want to be a lead Christian in this yeah. area. I want to be a disciple maker.
Yeah.
It's those people who get that. Because yeah. I would love, like, I'm kind of in this train where I think when you look at the list in 1 Timothy and Titus, you see these lists. There's these lists for older men and older women and younger women. It's like, where are the lists for the younger men? What's the list of eldership?
Yeah.
Like, every young man should aspire to be an elder. Yeah. And if we do that, we'll never have a hard time finding pastors.
Yeah. Another thing that interests me about this topic is when you're talking about those qualifications in Timothy, Titus, Peter, I would include the Peter, Peter in there
sure.
as well. They're all things that everyday Christians, every Christian's kind of commanded to do and be
yeah.
hold apt to teach, perhaps.
Yes.
But all of those other things are things that like Christians are supposed to be doing.
Yeah.
So in essence, an elder is just a person who does what they're supposed to.
Yeah.
You know, like
consistently.
Consistently. Yeah. Which is, it's funny to think about it like that,
yeah.
you know, because the only difference in an elder and a regular Christian is that they're actually doing the things that we've all been yeah. sort of commanded to do.
And I think it's that additional aspect of being willing to hold responsibility to help others do mm-hmm. it.
Yeah.
And again, it's just biblical Christianity, but in our context, it's so radical
yeah.
that would be, well, I'm not called to that. I'm just a normal Christian. I'm not called yeah. to be a pastor.
Yeah.
It's like, no, you are.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, so discovering those people in your congregation sometimes is as simple as looking for patterns of shepherding or the impulse for mm-hmm. shepherding
yeah.
in their lives.
Yeah.
In terms of the way that at Pillar, in our context, we have engaged people like that. I've taken a bit more formal approach, and we do this a lot. And I would say, I think about it like shooting basketball hoops. You know, it's like I'm going to take a lot of shots and probably not make all that many. Mm-hmm. But if I, the more I shoot, the more I make, probably.
Sure.
So anytime I notice those shepherding impulses or those gifts, I love to think about the faithfulness, availability, teachability piece, mm-hmm. FAT. You know, you might recognize mm-hmm. that. But recognizing those, when I see somebody who's faithful to the gospel, when they're available to be discipled, to learn, to grow, mm-hmm. and they're teachable, I feel like somebody like that can advance really, really fast in their faith
yeah.
if those three things are in place. When I see some of that, I usually do something like, it usually starts with a text message. Hey, man, I'd like to get together and talk with you about something pretty serious. Do you have time to get together in a couple days? Usually that tips off to them that this isn't a casual conversation. I really want to talk to you about something kind of weighty, you know?
Yeah.
And, usually they say, yeah, happy to do that. And I say, okay, well, let's meet on Tuesday at IHOP or, you know, and we make a plan to do that. And we show up in that place. And when we sit down, I say right off the bat, so I brought you here today because I've been observing and noticed that you're really good, at shepherding your family. Like you're mm-hmm. unusually interested in the spiritual needs of your family. I've also noticed that you really care about your coworkers and your neighbors. You're always sharing the gospel with them and bringing them to church with you. And I just want you to know that those are the qualities and characteristics or the raw materials that God often uses to make pastors.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if you've ever thought about being a pastor or not, but if you have, I want you to know that as your pastor, I'd be eager to help you get ready for that work. And I'd be your biggest sort of cheerleader
That's awesome.
And ally in that work.
Yeah.
And so I'm not telling you you're called. I'm just saying if you're sensing a call, don't hesitate to tell me because I see it in you.
That's so good.
And then I just kind of leave it there. I call it dropping it hot. Like I just want to drop it right on your lap and let it burn, you know? And usually the response I get is something like, oh man, that's super nice. Thank you. But no thanks.
Yeah.
I got a
yeah.
career, I got a life, I got a job, I got a thing.
Yeah.
And then, you know, it's not uncommon though for sometimes you have that conversation and it goes away and you never hear from them again.
Yeah.
I would say more often than not though, a little bit of time goes by and I get a message that says something like, hey, I can't stop thinking about our breakfast at IHOP a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
Can we get together and talk about that again?
Yeah.
And it starts there. And
so
it's
good.
Like this process that begins. And I found when I do that regularly with anytime I recognize those gifts, if I'll have those conversations, it results in a steady stream of people who are interested in taking it to the next level of their growth.
Yeah,
so,
that's
yeah.
really good.
Yeah. That's been our experience in drawing from within. And in almost, not almost, every church planner that our congregation has that we've sent out has a story about when I sat down with them in a place or had a conversation with them. They can tell you the story. One guy was on the way to a birthday party. Another guy was literally in an IHOP. And I mean, we've had those conversations, and those are dear conversations to them. You know?
Yeah. I tell you, I don't use the fat analogy. You know, we did another podcast about health, and so I say stay away from that or the acronym. But we sometimes talk about 4-H leaders, and not the 4-H like the green thumb or you know, the agricultural people. But 4-H, number one, we're looking for people who are humble, that are willing to serve in any way, like we've already talked about. Second, they're hungry, like they want more. Like, give me something more to tackle. I love Jesus, and I want to see more happen. Yeah. It's kind of that holy discontent within them. They want to see more happen. Third, they're happy, and specifically when it comes to theology. I am done with the days, Clint, of having angry theologians that are young. It's like, I still believe all those things. I'm just not mad about it. That's what I tell people. My theology makes me happy. Yeah. And I'm looking for happy people. That means they've gotten out of the cage stage. And then finally, that are willing to hustle, that are willing to work really, really hard. If they're willing to do that, because that's what I want to be. Like, lock arms with me. We'll be best friends. We'll do this together. And what I've told my guys is I am fiercely loyal. Like, let's just be friends and do this until Jesus comes back. And so we try to invite men into this. I think what I've found, though, is I found a lot of guys who had live out the rich young ruler is they hear this call. Hey, what do I got to do to be a leader? Hey, here's what you got to do. And they walk away sad because they realize, it's just going to require more than I'm willing to give. And it's really not a lot. It's just Jesus has got to be more important than X, Y, and Z. And sometimes X, Y, and Z is just, we wrapped our life around it.
Yeah. And it is so good. Like the things that you think you're giving up to be a part of this kind of community. I just think about right now. Our church was hard to plant. I almost gave up. I mean, I don't know what your experience was like, but man, I told you already I was young. I had not really preached. I had a music degree. I had a master's degree in music, for goodness sake. Like, what do I know about starting a church? So I wasn't equipped. I wasn't educated. I wasn't surrounded by the right resources. And I went out in there and do it. What I had was a firm conviction, and I was sent by the leaders of my church. I mean, I had a firm conviction that God was calling me to do it. And I got out there and I felt like I was making all these huge sacrifices. But the truth is, God gave me a family in that. He gave me like a very dear family that right now is ministering to my wife and children and my family. Like, they feel as close to me as my physical family does. And the work we've been able to be a part together with sending church plants and starting new things all over the place has been like, it's going to be our life story. It's going to be like the story of our family. I just think that those who step away from it because they think they're going to miss out on something really are forsaking the opportunity at something much, much greater.
Yeah, so, it's good, man.
Yeah.
Love it.
All right. So, discovering pastoral potential. I think you have to be wildly optimistic about pastoral potential in others, and you have to take people when they're not ready and imagine what God could do with them in the same way that He did with you.
That's right.
As you walk with them in preparation.
That's right. I love it.
All right. Thanks, Noah.
You've been listening to the New Churches Podcast, brought to you by Send Network. If you liked what you heard, take a minute to rate and review us or share this episode with a friend. It's the best way to show your support. To find more reliable resources and to participate in the Church Planning Masterclass, visit newchurches.com.